the Financial Sense Lifetime Income Program. Now, here's the Financial Sense News Team, Jim Poplava and John Loeffler.
Hi, everyone. I'm Jim Poplava, and welcome to this week's edition of Lifetime Income.
And I'm John Loeffler. A very touchy subject, it's touchy because it's tragic, is that of elder abuse. And a corollary to elder abuse is financial elder abuse. And that's what we would like to examine here on the program today, because if you don't plan things properly, you could become a victim. It's a horrible thing to think of that families do this, but it's amazing how inheritance and other forms of money lead to incredible tensions among siblings, especially if there are large numbers of siblings. There was recently an article in Barron's magazine talking about spotting and preventing financial abuse. Parents do hope their children will get along, and they told the story in the magazine article of a retired couple who were supporting two of their seven adult children. The two that they were supporting had been divorced. The adult children helped care for their aging parents. However, later on, the couple both developed dementia, and the two sisters, the two involved, didn't notify the rest of their siblings what was happening to their parents. Instead, what they began to do was to sell off their parents' stock and write themselves checks for vacations or for new cars or down payments on homes, of course, leaving their siblings out of what was their entitled share or would be their share of an inheritance when it came. And it finally took a $100,000 capital gains tax bill that alerted the other siblings to the abusive dealings that were going on. How they found out about that, I don't know, because that would have come up on an income tax return, but they did. And then, of course, you have to undo the damage. You know, there's a tremendous amount of things that have to be done to try to recoup that.
Yeah, in the Barron's case, these two siblings siphoned off $700,000 over a couple of years. And so here was the situation, John, where parents had seven children. They were helping two of the siblings, which were divorced, and they were the caretakers of the parents. And everything was going okay until the parents developed dementia. And since both the daughters had powers of attorney to make financial decisions, they just started to siphon the assets out. And this is something that, believe it or not, folks, is more common than you would expect. In fact, there was an article published by a major insurance company, and this is what Barron's alerted to. It's becoming an epidemic with elder abuse. I know in our own practice, this is something that we have seen become more common, I would say, in the last two decades. And here's some statistics. 37% of caretakers say that they see financial abuse with the patients they take care of. 40% of active caretakers say that they're seeing financial abuse, and the average loss per victim, now this is just an average, is $36,000. And if there is some kind of mental decline, such as dementia or Alzheimer's, the abuse, John, is $41,000, not to mention the emotional toll on the victims, because sometimes the victims may be made aware of that their assets have been siphoned off, there's been bad investment decisions, there's all kinds of things that take place, and all of a sudden, that person is put in a traumatized moment because they're thinking, oh my goodness, my assets have been siphoned off. How am I going to take care of myself?
Quite often, like victims of, well, let's look at spousal abuse, I think is probably a good area. They don't come forward. They don't talk about it. It's an embarrassment. They don't want it to be known. And quite often, in trying to deal with it in their own way, they take even riskier moves and become subject to further financial scams trying to compensate for it. It's an amazing process that you see go on.
Yeah, and you know, we've heard about stories from elder abuse or financial abuse from Brooke Astor, the philanthropist, to Mickey Rooney, to, you know, Groucho Marx. I mean, the estate planning pages are filled with these kind of stories. And the problem is, it's become more prominent. There's two reasons for this. Number one, affluent investors are more likely to become victims, because if you have a lot of money, you are subject to, let's say, unscrupulous children who may want their inheritance prior to let's say, the parents passing on. And the second reason is people are living longer. Men today have an average life expectancy between 72.7 years and 87.3 years. With women, it's almost 79 years to 89 years. So there's a couple things going on here. People are accumulating more wealth. And number two, these individuals tend to be living longer. The fact that they're living longer makes them more susceptible and more likely that they, somewhere down the road, we know as we age, we're less financially able to make astute financial decisions. Our mental faculties are less sharp, so we're prone to mistakes and also to frailties. And what happens sometimes is parents, you know, will often turn to their children and say, you know what, I can't handle this anymore. This is way beyond my mental faculties to deal with these issues, whether it's the financial markets. Let's face it, folks, this has been a very difficult financial recovery ever since it began in 2009, whether it's low interest rates, volatile markets, rapid rotations in the market. And for many elder individuals, they simply can't keep up with it. So they think they're doing the right thing by turning over powers to their children, and sometimes those children, because they see the money and they may be in difficult financial straits or not doing well financially, have a tendency to take advantage. We had a situation where wife lost her husband. Eventually, she got remarried. Her and her new husband decide to move into a retirement home. And anybody that moves into a retirement home knows that costs a few bucks. Well, during the financial crisis, or after the financial crisis, one son basically lost his business, went on unemployment. There were four children in this family. Basically asked his mom for a handout, a help. Well, that handout eventually became $5,000 a month. And it was okay, especially after 2009, when, you know, the markets were going up double digits a year. But, you know, there were years like 2011, the market didn't go up double digits, or 2015. And this, I think, was right around 2011. It was a year that the market was having a lot of difficulty. I had to call my client in with her new husband and just say, look, you are taking out too much money a month. You are taking out the equivalent of 12% returns and now 15% returns on your account. It's okay. And you can get away with it when the market's up 15% or 20%. And the reason that she was taking out 15%, she was taking out an additional $5,000 a month to help her son. And, you know, I talked to her and she said, well, you know, we're in a recession. I said, no, the recession ended in 2009. This is 2011. We're in an economic recovery. And so she agreed to start cutting it back gradually. And that's exactly what happened. It was phased out over a 3 or 4 month period. And then all of a sudden, you know, last year, all of a sudden, they weren't monthly withdrawals, but all of a sudden they were like $10,000 withdrawals, $15,000 withdrawals. And all of a sudden her account balances began to go down because of these, I would call them periodic large distributions, and had to call her in once again. And basically, it was the same son. So rather than, I guess he was talking to her, I guess he was aware that we were aware previously of what he was doing, taking that money from his mom's account or having his mom send him that check. And so it was periodic distributions. And I basically had to call her in and say, you know what, I'm sorry, but you know, this is 6-7 years into an economic recovery. He's got to go out and get a job, because if you continue to go on like you are, 6, 7, 8 years from now, you're going to be dead broke. And so, John, this is something, and we'll have some actual case studies that we're going to talk about here, that we've seen over and over again. We just had a recent case where the son was given a power of attorney over his mother's account, but the son started a business. So basically, mom's grandchild. And he was taking large amounts of cash out of her account in loaning it to his son for inventory in his business. and he refused to stop it. So, you know, the only thing we did is we had to alert authorities, and basically we asked him to transfer his account, because what he was doing was considered elder abuse, because he was taking money that he really wasn't authorized to do, and he was making loans to his son, and those loans hadn't been repaid, nor was there any interest that was paid to mom's estate.
You know, Jim, the study that you're talking about here is really showing that the longer you live and the higher your net worth, so you have two factors here, longevity and net worth value, there's about a 1 in 5 chance you could be subject to elder financial abuse. So now the question is, now that we understand the situation, as you're planning retirement and your will, etc., what steps can be taken? And then I guess the second corollary question is, what indicators might be that something is up? In other words, if siblings are suspecting something, what would be the indicators of that?
The first step is to have a financial advisor who, you know, maybe you have a plan that is done, so the advisor knows what the assets are or the income is. And for example, the cases that I just mentioned, where knowing our client for a long period of time, all of a sudden, the distributions picked up considerably on a monthly basis, to the point that, you know, it was okay during the early boom years of the market recovery, but nonetheless, there was large amounts of cash that were going outside the account. So having a relationship with an advisor, also a good relationship with a doctor. So, you know, periodic checkups, your own personal physician can pick up on the fact that maybe there are cases of growing dementia. And also, you know, being aware of your own mental faculties between a husband and wife. We had a situation a number of years ago where a husband all of a sudden began to call us with these unusual trade activities, and then when we would call to confirm what he wanted done, he forgot that he even did that. He goes, I didn't authorize that. I didn't tell you to do that. And so in this case, we had to alert the wife to what the husband was doing, and he did have the beginning signs of dementia. And this was one of the things that we were able to do. So eventually, the wife became sole trustee of the trust, and she was alone responsible for making the financial decisions. And we also had a successor trustee for her in case something happened to her. But basically, this was the first signs that we saw that something was going wrong with unusual trading activities. Some of the things that the Barron's article talked about, some red flags, and I've seen this, all of a sudden, a new friend of an elder shows up and is reluctant to leave the older adult during, let's say, interactions with financial institutions, or is speaking on behalf of the client. You know, this is one that we've seen several times. All of a sudden, an elderly woman all of a sudden has a new friend, female or male. And all of a sudden, that person comes to the meetings and is sort of speaking on behalf of the elder in terms of what needs to be done. And it's always usually increased distributions, large amounts of money, or withdrawal amounts. And so all of a sudden, a new friend shows up. That's a red flag. The other one is sudden changes in investment philosophy. I just mentioned the case where one of my clients basically all of a sudden start calling with these erratic trading decisions that some of them just didn't make sense. So all of a sudden, there are abrupt changes, or investment philosophy is completely different than what it's been for a long time. There's a big red flag. Another one, and we see this with wealthy clients, and all of a sudden, mom or dad, whoever the surviving spouse is, wants to go into retirement home. They have a considerable estate, but all of a sudden, they're put into a low and retirement home when obviously they can afford much more. And all of a sudden, junior, or in this case, the daughter, starts taking large trustee fees. So, you know, lack of amenities or facility that does not blend in with the capabilities of the estate financially. The other thing you often see is purchases that seniors can't use. Had a situation where basically a daughter had mom buy her BMW 325, based on the idea that, well, gosh, with a nicer car, I can get to mom and see mom more often. So purchases that seniors can't use. You know, how about a gym membership? You're 85 years old in a gym membership at 24-hour fitness. The other thing you often see are financial transactions that benefit the person with the power of attorney, where it's just not, you look at it and you go, wait a minute, how does this benefit mom or dad? It just doesn't fit. Or you see some unusual withdrawals. All of a sudden, somebody calls the office up. We see this in many cases where we see financial abuse. And there are distributions. A large distribution request is made. Or the periodic distributions and the monthly checks are increased substantially. And that's one of the first alerts that we get, John. When we see something like that, there's a large periodic or lump sum distribution, especially with an elderly client, we make sure we call that client up and just say, hey, I notice you're taking out a considerable amount. Just wanted to check and make sure you're okay. And so you look for those kind of signs. In fact, one time we had a request where a gentleman had called up. Client lives in Escondido here in California. First of all, the husband had passed away. That was the first clue. And all of a sudden, this gentleman calls up posing as my female client and wanting a large distribution of $60,000 wired to a bank account in Miami. And all of a sudden, we started getting a little suspicious because it didn't sound like our client. It sounded like a man that was trying to talk and sound like a woman. And then we knew that the client husband had passed away a couple of years earlier. So we had asked this supposedly female client, who was really a man posing as our client, well, gee, how's your husband doing? Oh, he's just fine. He's on the beach and enjoying the sun. So we knew immediately that this was a false call, that somebody, turned out, somebody had hacked into her computer and was basically got a hold of bank statements or the amount of the bank statements and was trying to get money out of the account and wire transfer to account. So these are, John, just some things that are red flags that if you see these, if you're listening to this program, if you're aware of anything like this, a new friend, sudden changes, mom and dad's investment philosophy, or all of a sudden lack of amenities, purchases that are being made that mom or dad can't use, financial transactions, or even reluctance to speak about, all of a sudden you notice that things are happening in the account. And maybe you're a sibling that is on the account and notice that there's a lot of activity that can't be accounted for, or maybe some withdrawals.
You know, those are instances of elder abuse. You were talking about the one where this person impersonating a female client was requesting a distribution. There must be other scams that go on out there, for example, that affect this situation. I'm sort of fishing around here. Why don't you tell me?
One of the more common ones is somebody calling posing as an IRS agent. And it's basically, first of all, they're requesting ID. They're requesting, you know, that you basically wire transfer the money for back payments or a debit card. First of all, you know, they may have gotten hold of your Social Security number with some kind of, you know, online hack into your computer system. And it may look like the call is coming from the government. But in the real world, the IRS, folks, and this is very important if you've ever been subject to this, the IRS never asks you to wire transfer or to prepay your taxes with debit cards. And if they contact you, it's usually via the mail, not over the phone. So if you get a call from an IRS agent, that's not the way they do it. They usually send you a notice in the mail, and certainly they would not be requesting you to wire transfer money to a bank account or asking you to get a prepaid debit card. That is a very common one. The other one is so-called calls from grandchildren that call up and they're in trouble. Grandma, I need some money. I'm having difficulty paying my tuition at school or something like that. So children calling up or grandchildren calling up. Another one is somebody tries to weave into friendship with an adult, and they do it with affinity with, let's say, ethnic or religious or community organizations. We had a situation where an elder woman came to our office with her new friend who basically went to her church, but he was a younger man, and basically it was romance. And romance is a very common thing online, that all of a sudden, you know, an elderly woman now by herself, or an elderly gentleman all by himself, will share one of these in our case studies. Another one, somebody shows up at the door and says, you know, we're in the neighborhood and it's been reported you have large home repairs that need to be done. So, John, it is just one of these things that you should be aware of. And there's all kinds of common scams. They keep coming up with new ones. Hacking into your computer is one, where they get a hold of bank accounts. As I mentioned, that one individual posing as my client requesting a $60,000 wire transfer to a Miami bank account.
Well, Jim, what actions could be taken to mitigate elderly abuse? You know, if you see the signs, then what's the next step?
Well, a couple of things you can do in advance. Number one, plan ahead to protect your assets and ensure that your wishes are followed. And especially if you are naming children as successor trustees and you have a few children. Also, especially if you're naming children that you know that are having financial difficulties. Second, consult with a qualified financial professional or attorney before signing complex agreements or anything you don't understand. I'm going to share with you a case study here that we uncovered that was really, boy, I tell you, this person needs to be disbarred. But build relationships with professionals involved with your finances, as they can assist you in monitoring suspicious activity, as we just discussed here in several of the cases where we saw increased withdrawals, increased lump sum payments. Limit use of cash, prefer checks and credit cards that leave a paper trail. And then also, sometimes when you have siblings or friends or, you know, a new romance, feel free to say no, keeping in mind it's your money. And it's just absolutely amazing that we had a situation where it was a second marriage. The second marriage, the husband was very, very successful businessman, very wealthy. We're talking about an estate that was worth well over $20 million. He passes on. We had an estate plan. And because there were children, there were four children, in this case, three daughters from the wife's first marriage, and then one son from the husband's previous marriage. So there were four children. And the husband decided that given the financial lack of responsibility that he saw in the siblings, the children, and then also their spouses, that the children would not have access to the principal. They would get income. And the husband passed away, and all of a sudden, you know, 2 or 3 years, wife is alone, and basically it was over Thanksgiving dinner, and all the children had come for Thanksgiving dinner, and, you know, they started talking about the estate. Mom is obviously getting a little bit older and a little bit, I would say, on the frail side. And she informed the children that when she passed on, they would be taken care of. They would get a monthly allowance or income based on the trustee, but they would not be getting the principal. Well, lo and behold, about a year later, all of a sudden, my client calls and says that she's redoing her estate plan. Number one, that concerned us because her estate plan, we had worked with her husband in setting up the estate plan, including the charitable trust. All these things were taken care of in advance, and all of a sudden she's getting a new estate plan. And when I talked to my client, I said, what is going on here? What are you changing? Oh, well, you know, I was at the beauty salon and my beautician suggested an estate plan. I've been thinking of making some modifications to the trust. And in this case, My client was able to make modifications to her trust. She could not make modifications to her husband's trust because that was irrevocable, nor could she make modifications to the charitable remainder trust. And to shorten the story, all of a sudden she's calling. She says, you know, I went to lunch with the attorney and they want me to sign these documents with this trust department of this bank. And I said, you know, what's going on? Because we have a successor trustee. Well, these people are closer, and the attorney suggested that this would be much better for me because the bank is close by to the retirement home that she lived in. And so, you know, the client has the right to do that. And I said, well, when the documents are done, you know, please forward them on to us so we are aware of everything that needs to be done in case anything needs to be changed. And we always have our clients update their documents and send them to us because that's very important from financial planning. Well, lo and behold, we couldn't get the documents. So I called my client. They go, you know, I went to this lunch and I signed these papers. I'm not sure what I signed. I said, well, I'm going to call the attorney and I will have those documents or a copy with your permission. Why don't you call the attorney, authorizing that attorney to release those documents to us? Well, the attorney said they were sick, they had issues, and to make a long story short, they didn't send us the documents, which raised suspicion. So we had our client get the documents. And then what we did is we looked at them. For number one, the attorney and the trustee wrote themselves in with the power of attorney that could revoke my client as trustee of her own trust. The other thing is the bank that was named as trustee was a bank that was formed like 3 or 4 years ago. They just started a trust department. And it turned out that the attorney was actually talking with the children. So the attorney was brought into the picture by the children, hoping to modify the estate plan in a way where they would have access to the principal when mom died. Luckily, we caught that. We revoked the power of attorney to the trust company and to that attorney who could revoke my client's trusteeship at any time. And then we made sure that the estate plan was brought up to date. There were some few minor changes on gifts that my client wanted to make out of her portion of her trust when she passed on. But also, we now have a professional trustee has taken over for her because, well, number one, she could afford it. Number two, she just wasn't as sharp, and she said she didn't want to deal with it. She had the money, but we stopped a fraud case before it could done some harm. And actually, the case where the children would have had access to the principal, which was not what the husband originally wanted, given the lack of responsibility financially that he saw in the siblings.
I'm a big fan of what I call bullet items, meaning A, B, C, D, this type of thing. So if we looked at this discussion we've had here today, number one, what steps to detect, and then B, what steps to take, and C, what steps to prevent.
Step number one, establish a financial plan and review it every 6 months. In the case of my client that I just discussed, you know, when you see something come up unexpectedly, fortunately, my client made a call to us, informed us that something was being done, which alerted us to the financial documents we would need. And that's where we discovered this potential fraud. So establish a financial plan, review it every 6 months. This is good to find out that you're on track, you're okay, and to look for things that might come up that would raise some red flags and suspicions. Have regular checks and balances. This includes professionals, designees with powers of attorney or powers of healthcare, and you need to have a check and balance. In this case, we had a professional trustee finally come in, take over for the client because she was getting more forgetful. She didn't have dementia at this time, but she was getting more forgetful, and she was aware that she could slip, sign things or do things. The fact that she signed over a power of attorney with this trust company and lawyer that basically would have revoked her own trusteeship was an alert. Three, communicate regularly with individuals that you have a relationship financially, whether it's your estate planning attorney or your financial advisor. Get permission also, and this is very important for financial advisors, to contact other family members or a professional representative like an attorney to talk about anything that is caught as an advisor your attention. This is important. We like the idea of assigning co-trustees, and especially as you age and get older, for signs of dementia, or if you see things like I mentioned earlier with my client, where large distributions are involved, require double signatures for certain dollar amounts. Boy, this is just common sense, folks. If all of a sudden, you know, large distributions are being made, and you have a power attorney with one of your children, make sure that there's a double signature. Maybe it's an attorney or it's somebody that you trust. In other words, you're creating checks and balances. And another one, you know, make your financial advisor the bad guy. If all of a sudden you've got siblings that are children that are calling and say, hey, mom, you know, I've run up $25,000. And you know, we had a case where son ran up $50,000 of credit card debt over a couple of years and was calling on mom to pay off the bills. And we just said, you know what? Your mom needs that money. You know, I'm sorry, but you ran it up. That's your responsibility. The other thing is make sure that you have a will and estate plan that is up to date, and you have possible successor trustees. And you really need to look at this when you are naming children as trustees or giving them powers of attorney, that you really understand those children and know them well in terms of their financial prowess, how well they understand finances, the investment markets, and also their own finances. If they're in bad need financially, you know, you assigning them as trustee, because as a trustee, they do have the right to charge trustee fees for taking care of the estate. And this is where we see a lot of abuse with children, where the trustee fees are inordinate amount of money that is being paid. Basically, they're siphoning off money on a mom or dad's estate or both. So these, John, are some good steps. And as a result, we're seeing it more common today. It's financial difficulties with the economy and the recession. So oftentimes children get divorced, they get into financial pickles that they can't get themselves out of. The fact that, you know, parents, this especially happens with the more affluent ones, and especially as they get older in age. I mean, you know, the very famous case of Brooke Astor, the philanthropist who was taken advantage by her grandson. So it is a lot more common than you would expect.
Well, Jim, it's time for our weekly case study. As with all of our case studies, they are real life case studies involving real people. We simply change the names to protect privacy. And also, we have slides on the website that accompany this conversation so that you can follow what it is Jim is describing. So, situation this week. Oh, we also, by the way, we have a number where people can call for elder abuse, what, advice?
Where to get help or, you know, possibly turn in when you suspect something. That's going to be accompanying the case studies. But we have several short case studies that'll illustrate a couple of these key points. First case study, son was not acting in the best interest of his mother. Son put his interest before hers, took unnecessary risks that could have severely impacted her retirement. And this was not a case that was intentional elder abuse. It was just lack of knowledge. We'll call this the case of Cheryl Melkin. She's a client in her mid-80s and lives in an assisted living facility. The only child has a power of attorney to handle her financial affairs. A contract was signed by all parties, and the proceeds were to be used for a home purchase. In other words, son was taking investing mom's money. After the transaction was completed, it was revealed that the son was investing the money with his real estate agent who was flipping homes in Las Vegas. Any proceeds received were not put back into his mother's account, so there were concerns about these investments not being appropriated in the mother's best interest. We spoke with him and advised him that these investments were not suitable given his mother's current living situation. We also expressed concerns over the speculative nature of the investments and how it could be disastrous to her retirement. The son understood our position, repaid the loan amount to his mom. By repaying the loan, the client was able to avoid the potential implications of another real estate bubble. So this was not intentional, but basically the son, lack of knowledge, thought he was doing something that would earn a better return for his mother. The second case involved a trust was set up correctly with co-trustees to help protect father. However, the son's ignorance endangered his father's retirement. People can be taken advantage if there's no accountability. Even family members can make bad choices when put in the wrong position. We'll call this the case of Max Rossi. He's a longtime client. He currently suffers from Alzheimer's and lives in an assisted living facility. The majority of his assets are held in trust that has two of his sons, Mike and Ryan, acting as co-trustees. Mike lives close to his father, and Ryan lives on the other side of the country. For simplicity, Ryan lets Mike handle most of the affairs for their father, since he was much closer and was more aware of the circumstances. Mike handled most of the financial transactions for his father, and monthly withdrawal was established to cover father's living expense. After about a year, Mike contacted us to increase the withdrawals by $2,000 a month. This was done with the other brother being aware of this, but he paid little attention. Along comes another 6 months. Mike came back and asked to raise the withdrawal by another $1,000 per month. So now we are increasing distributions $3,000 extra a month. We asked questions to both brothers and learned that Max's living expense had not changed one iota. So there was no reason why $3,000 was taken out of the account. After urging Ryan to become more involved, it was discovered that Mike was actually taking approximately $1,500 a month, not to cover his father's expenses, but for his own personal benefit. Immediately, the monthly withdrawal was reduced, and Ryan worked with an estate planning attorney to revise Max's trust to remove Mike and replace him with another sibling as co-trustee.
You know, it's interesting how you think you know members of your family till this type of thing happens. Yeah, I guess money corrupts at some point or another, and the temptation to take advantage on the part of some siblings versus others gets too strong.
Yeah, the next case, in this case, elders can make poor decisions based on emotions like everyone else. Other individuals are happy to prey on these emotions. It's important that family remains involved to help detect potential abuse. It is very beneficial for key family members to know who to contact. In this case, Emmanuel is a client that was widowed after watching his wife of nearly 45 years succumb to an aggressive cancer. All his family lived out of state, and he was happy and didn't want to relocate. To help find some companionship, he moved into a senior facility so he could have more social interactions. He developed a relationship with a female friend of his and became very happy, often talking very fondly of her. His daughter, Sandy, came into town and requested a review meeting with us since she was concerned about her father's living situation. During the conversation, we expressed concerns over how much he was taking out each month from his accounts. Now, he explained that he was living in a two-bedroom with his female companion and was covering all of her expenses, including some of her personal expenses. We expressed our concern to him that he was being taken advantage of and that he would run out of money soon if he did not make changes in their current lifestyle. Basically, with his wife having passed on, he could move into a facility with only one bedroom, which would be considerably cheaper than the one that he had taken out to take care of his new female friend. He agreed to move, in the end, to a one-bedroom and no longer financially supported his female companion. He decreased his monthly expenses, and his daughter became involved with his finances. And finally, the last case, expensive does not necessarily mean a better standard of care. Defensive or aggressive behavior by caregivers suggests elder abuse. It is important to frequently check with an elder for signs of abuse or neglect and know that there are always options in any situation. In this case, Marvin and Kathy are fairly new clients who joined us because Marvin has ALS and is no longer able to manage their finances. He recently moved into a care facility because Kathy could no longer adequately take care of Marvin on her own. We worked very closely with Kathy to make sure their financial needs were met, including the care Marvin receives in the nursing home. Kathy is still very healthy, independent, and chooses to remain living in their original home. Kathy visits Marvin every day and quickly learned that although they moved Marvin into one of the nicest and most expensive facilities, he was receiving subpar living care. Unfortunately, Marvin was not given certain services that were supposed to be included, had bed sores in his lower back and hips, caused him discomfort. To make matters worse, the facility aggressively denied any wrongdoing when Kathy attempted to ask questions about the service they were receiving, and Kathy was very scared for her husband's well-being and didn't know what to do. She expressed her frustration in a quarterly meeting. We quickly recommended that he be moved at once and explained to her the different options that were available, like switching facilities or even relocating to 24-hour in-home care for Marvin. After careful consideration, she chose to move Marvin into another facility that treated him well and was closer and much more affordable.
If you're following these case studies online, there are resources there that you can click on for how to handle elder abuse or financial abuse, and you might want to highlight some of them, Jim.
Number one, there's the Consumer Protection Financial Bureau, which is consumerfinance.gov. The other one is the National Committee for the Prevention of Elder Abuse. That's PreventElderAbuse.org. And here's a couple. If you suspect elder abuse, contact the local authorities where the elder lives, including the police and most especially Adult Protective Services, APS, Adult Protective Services. There's also Elder Care Locator, where trained operators will refer you to a local agency that can help. That number is 1-800-677-1116. And there's also links to Elder State Abuse Hotlines at nccafv.org. These are listed in the case study that we have accompanying this program. So if you want to click on there, you can find out if you suspect or just take a look at some of these areas that you have access to.
Coming up tomorrow on the program, our guest on the program is Carolyn Rosenblatt. She's an attorney and she deals specifically with the issue of elder abuse, causes, preventions, and what to do about it. That'll be tomorrow here on Lifetime Income.
And remember, John, some of the statistics like the Barron's article pointed out, if you are affluent in good health, there's a 1 out of 5 chance you could be subject to elder abuse or financial abuse down the line. And once again, the two main reasons that we're seeing more and more of this is number one, greater longevity. People are living longer, subject to Alzheimer's and dementia. And two, affluence. So please have a plan to account for these things, especially if you can sense these things happening with you. In the meantime, on behalf of John Loeffler and myself, we'd like to thank you for joining us here on Lifetime Income. And don't forget tomorrow, my interview with Karen Rosenblatt. She's an attorney specializing in elder abuse. So we're going to follow up on today's subject matter with an elder abuse attorney and give you more insight into this matter. In the meantime, until you and I talk again, we hope you have a pleasant week.
You can subscribe to Financial Sense NewsHour in the iTunes and BlackBerry podcast libraries or at feeds.feedburner.com/FSM. Find more information about our guests at www.financialsense.com/newshour. Friend us at www.facebook.com/financialsenseonline. For our on-the-go listeners, you can access Financial Sense on your mobile device at m.financialsense.com. The Financial Sense News Hour is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a solicitation or offer to purchase or sell any securities. The investments, investment strategies, and investment philosophies discussed or presented on the News Hour each involve their own unique risk factors, which are not discussed on the show. Responses to listener inquiries are based on the personal opinions of James Poplava and do not take into account listeners' suitability, objectives, or risk tolerance. Financial Sense NewsHour and its parent company shall not be liable for any financial losses that result from investing in any companies profiled on or advertising with Financial Sense, or arising out of the use of any material on the NewsHour. Be advised that you invest at your own risk.